tonight. This is Gary Parrish again from CBS Sports. It's now Monday, December 28th. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I'm joined by Matt Norlander and Sam Bassini, and hope everybody had a wonderful Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, I hope you just had a terrific Friday. Not much happened in the world of college basketball since we last convened. Only one game Saturday. It was Louisville at Kentucky. 40 minutes of basketball, 40 fouls called. Kentucky won 75-73. Damian Lee finished with 27 points in a losing effort. And Scal Labissiere finished with 2 points for Kentucky. And by Sunday afternoon, that had become the story, thanks to our buddy Adam Zagoria, quoting an NBA scout who shredded Scal in a way that drew a response from John Calipari. Here's what the scout reportedly told Zagoria, then we'll talk about it. Quote, "No strength, no toughness, no game. Comes off the bench, plays 10 minutes, had 2 points, 3 rebounds, 0 for 3 from the floor. Shot an air ball and an easy hook. That guy is what you call a paper tiger, a mock draft myth. He's an effing fantasy, that guy." Zagoria reportedly told the scout that Draft Express and is now projecting Labissiere as the fifth pick in the 2016 NBA draft. He used to be number one over at Draft Express. The scout said this, quote, "He's not number one, he's not number five, he's not number 51. That's a joke. He's not going to play anymore for Kentucky, I don't think. There's nothing he could do. The Louisville big men are mediocre at best. Truth be told, they're below mediocre. He couldn't do nothing with them. He's a fraud. The thing is going the other way fast." End quote. Sam Bassini, what do you make of this?
I mean, that's a heck of a quote by that scout. We'll say that most scouts that I've spoken with don't talk with that way.
No.
And I mean, by all means, that's certainly Adam's prerogative to report that. I think that he absolutely made the right call reporting what he got from the scout. My brain, like, I don't think it's overly harsh by any stretch, but the way that he speaks of Scal makes me think that he's only seen Scal for like a 10-minute sample in this game, and then like maybe a little bit like during the season. Most good scouts have been watching Scal Labissiere for, you know, 3 years, 4 years. They're very familiar with him in a way that I got the impression that this scout wasn't. And that's what I'm just like kind of throwing this away. I'm just like, this is, you know, one, I guess there are probably like 500 to 600 guys in the NBA right now, as far as front office, between scouts, basketball ops departments, analytics departments, everything. I guess there are around like 500, 600 guys. That's 1/500th or 1/600th of the opinion on Scal. I would not take too much away from that by any means. I'll tell you this right now. Scal Labissiere entered a draft that happened tonight or tomorrow afternoon or, you know, maybe on Friday for New Year's. He would still be a top 10 pick, in my opinion. At the very worst, he'd be a lottery pick. The upside is just too great. He's too good of an athlete. He has too much potential whenever you get him out in space in ways that Kentucky isn't really using him right now. I understand scouts' frustration with him at the moment, but this was over the top. It wasn't overly harsh. It was just over the top and dramatic and silly in a way that I have personally not heard a scout speak of a prospect before.
Yeah, Calipari took issue with the harshness of it. Like, you don't talk, these are kids. You don't talk about kids that way.
No, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that either. But I wasn't bothered by the harshness of the quote. I was just bothered by the dumbness of the quote. He's not 51st. Like, he's not the 51st pick? What are you talking about?
Okay, here's who I have at 51st on my board right now.
Right.
I have Sean Long from Louisiana Lafayette,
right,
which, you know, I just wrote about, actually. It's pretty funny that, and I really like Sean Long. He's also a 23-year-old power forward who has a bunch of defensive issues and is not nearly the prospect that Scal is. I love Sean Long. You should go read the thing I just wrote on Sean Long's journey to get to where he is, but he's not Scal.
Right.
Like, it just is what it is.
No, Norlander, correct me if I'm wrong. Scal could intentionally tear his ACL today. Like, just decide he's going to tear his ACL and go do whatever you have to do it. Develop a drug problem and still be picked in the top 50 of the 2016 NBA draft.
Drug problem, Mike.
Minor drug problem.
Okay. He is definitely, listen,
Like, what are NBA's, we talking about? He's not the 51st pick. NBA scouts,
he is simply dripping with potential. Back when we recorded a podcast well before the season started, I had mentioned that, you know, for anyone that had not seen Scal play yet, you'll notice that he has a skill set that is NBA ready, and offensively in a lot of ways that is very much true. Now, it is vexing. There is clearly something off with him. I don't fully get it. It's not just like his weight, and we talked about that last week. Like, eventually he can and will gain weight when he gets to the next level. I get all that, but like, sometimes he's having trouble like even handling the ball. Like, it's definitely bizarre. First of all, I'm all in favor of talking to scouts and getting scouts takes. And in a lot of cases, they have to be anonymous because the scout wants to keep his job. And like, you
cannot comment.
Yeah.
Like, there's NBA protocol that you cannot comment publicly, like on NBA prospects. So there it literally has to be anonymous.
Right. Okay. So for anyone that wanting to kill the scout for that, that's off the board. You can't, like, listen, the quotes are extremely over the top, and I don't get that. Listen, I totally get if a scout right now was like, I'm not taking a chance on Scal in top 10 right now with what he is. I totally get that, but I also agree that if we had a draft tonight, he would be a top 10 pick. It's just, it's undeniable. But to me, the issue is, can he fix this season to make Kentucky a better overall team? Because I think that they will be short of their potential without that. I don't have issues with the scout killing Scal, because honestly, like, they do. Listen, you're a scout. You got to be harsh. You can't always wear rose colored glasses because, you know, you're trying to bring on the best possible players and project as best as you can to the next level, and that means being honest with yourself and being as critical as possible in the face of all the good that you can see these guys mm-hmm. doing, because sometimes the college game can mask or at least deflect away from what you think will happen at the next level. I think Scal will get better as the season goes on. I don't think that he is going to get to the level. We had him as a first-team All-American. He's not going to get to that level. I don't think he can possibly make up that much ground. No. But I trust John Calipari as a coach and what he's been able to do, and he's had a lot of big men that have had a lot of success. So I expect him to turn it around to a certain point. But it is definitely interesting how when you watch him play and you see that he's not starting, and when he's on the floor, he's not the player that we have seen in the past. It's definitely totally confusing, and there's got to be something in his head. I don't know. I mean, just, and is he this bad? I want to know, is he this bad in practice too? Like, is it entirely this? Or is it simply only when it comes to game time? When he's not starting, that indicates to me that it's also happening when we're not seeing him on camera, and that his practice habits or what he's doing in practice maybe isn't as good as what it would have been 2-3 months ago.
I guess I would say this. Clearly, he's not been great in practice either, or else he wouldn't have been yanked from the starting lineup. He has not been good. I think some of it is... I think you can actually attribute it to two different things. At this point, let's make it three. At this point, it's in his head. Like, why wouldn't it be? I mean, you're 19 years old. You've been projected as a lottery pick forever. You know, you come from Haiti. You've got a real opportunity, like an actual opportunity to break a cycle of poverty. You know, there are a lot of people relying on you, whether it's actually stated or not. You're going to change people's lives. And suddenly it's not going well. You were always supposed to go in the top five of the 2016 NBA draft, and everything that happened between then and now, it was supposed to be simple, relatively speaking. And yet it's not going that way for him. And that's got to mess with your head. It would mess with my head. Beyond that, he didn't play basketball really for 2 years. Like, he has not played, but he was hurt his junior year of high school, and then his guardian nonsensically transferred him from ECS in Memphis to Lausanne in Memphis. Now, listen, Lausanne's a great school. ECS is a great school. But he did it with motives that were, let's just say, not the purest. And so Scal hasn't played real basketball in 2 years. That's an issue. I also think, and Sam, you could maybe speak on this a little bit better than I, Seth Davis and Doug Gottlieb were on CBS on Saturday. And I think Doug asked Seth, what does Scal do well right now? And Seth said, attack the offensive glass. And whether that's true or not, that's not the point. I wonder if the correct answer to that question is this. What Scal does well are things that Kentucky isn't asking him to do. Like, yep. I wonder how much of that is the issue. Like, he's a bad fit with the way Kentucky is playing because John Calipari likes his bigs to be bigs. Mm-hmm. And Scal, even though he's 7 feet and technically listed as a center, I believe, he's a pick and pop power forward. I mean, that's yep. I think that's what I've always thought that's what he's going to be in the NBA, a pick and pop power forward. And they're not using him like that. They're not using him in space. And I think all of those things are factors to what we're watching so far be a disappointing freshman season.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, we kind of saw the same thing last year a little bit with Karl Towns. Through his first 20 games, Karl Towns, I think, only scored in double figures like 7 times. And then in the first 4 games or something, there was a stretch of 4 games like in, you know, January. I think it was like it started in like mid-January where Karl Towns averaged something like 5 points and like 3 rebounds a game while playing like 20 minutes a game.
Was masked behind the platoon. I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I think we weren't on Towns as much because he wasn't seen. He certainly was not seen as a top 3 pick coming into the season. And then with Kentucky having the undefeated season and consistently winning and winning by double digits every freaking time and the platoon system, I think that's part of why. And with Towns, he wasn't as Towns was never as bad as Scal has been. I'm not saying he hasn't, because he's providing a little more context for anyone that might be curious. That's all.
He's not, because he can provide value defensively and he can rebound the ball and he's just a bigger body. He's more physically developed already than Scal is.
Right.
The problem with Scal is that I would say that he is very good at the things Kentucky doesn't really utilize him in. They don't really utilize him in pick and pops. They don't get him out into space. They, you know, when you see him run the floor, he's getting up and down the floor. Like there was that play in the Louisville game, for instance, where he beat everyone down the floor. I think Tyler Ulis made that ridiculous pass to him, and he's kind of lost the ball when going up for it. That's a confidence thing, I think. And as he continues to get comfortable with the college game, I think that'll come along. But as far as whether or not he should be playing a lot, I will say this. Kyle Tucker at the Courier-Journal in Kentucky tweeted during the Louisville game that Scal probably shouldn't be on the floor right now. And I do think I agree with that to an extent, actually, because the problem with Scal is right now is if he's not confident offensively, he doesn't provide any sort of rebounding ability because he can't establish position. He doesn't really provide a whole lot as far as rim protection. He's good from the weak side rotating over, but the rest of the defensive problems are definitely evident because he's not real sure where to rotate and stuff. And again, I think that goes back to what Gary was just talking about. He didn't play basketball for 2 years. That's why I thought that, you know, we had those conversations during the preseason about All-America. And if you remember, like, I was like, this first team All-American seems a little bit high for Scal.
No, you guys, I think really I was out there by myself on that one.
Yeah, like I didn't think that would be a thing. But I did expect more at this point. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, he's been very under a rotation spot at Kentucky right now. And that's a significant problem. And especially whenever you consider the fact that, as I've mentioned a few times, he's already, or I don't know that he's already 20 years old, but he's relatively close to being 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's something that'll kind of set alarms off for scouts in that he's an older freshman, gives you less time to develop. Your growth curve is already a little bit higher up on that bell curve. But having said that, it's way too early in the season. We're 12 games in. Like I said, I think on Twitter yesterday, NBA scouts have so much larger of a sample size than 12 games at Kentucky on Scal Abissier. Even I have a larger sample size. Even Gary does. Even Matt does, as far as what we've seen from Scal Abissier. I think that taking the opinion of one scout who, and like I said, this is just me speculating, but based on what was said to Adam Zagoria, it seemed like there was a little bit of a lacking familiarity with LeBissiere's past and with what he's been able to accomplish in the past, and that he's basically just going off of the Louisville game and maybe some other games this year. And I think that's not the case with all scouts. I think that's not the case with very many scouts, to be honest.
Let me touch on two things you just said. One, I think the most important thing, it's very early. Like, what are we talking about? You know, Kelly Oubre was buried on Kansas's bench for most of the early season last season. He still ended up as a lottery pick. He's playing right now in the NBA. I'm not trying
Oubre, to... Oubre went 15th, but...
Okay. So right there. Still a top 15 pick, right?
Yeah.
You know, in Andre Drummond averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds in 1 year of college. Now I think he's averaging 18 and 16 in the NBA. DeAndre Jordan came off Texas A&M's bench. Jrue Holiday averaged single digits. Steven Adams was just a guy at Pitt. Now he's a rotation player on a title contender. My point being,
E.J. Mullins had a way worse season than Scal is having right now at Ohio State during his freshman year and still went 25th or so in the draft.
Right. So barring something like injury wise or red flags that I don't think exist, he's a first round draft pick. I don't even care how the rest of the season goes. He's going to be picked in the first round. Judging any sort of prospect, you know, 12 games into their presumed only year of college is just silly. It's a silly thing to do. And I guess I would tie it back to what the scout actually said and what Adam Zagoria reported. Listen, I like Adam. If his goal, and I don't want to speculate on what his goals are or were, but if his goal was to post something that would get a lot of attention, here we are, right? He got a Hall of Fame coach to respond to it publicly, and it was the topic of conversation last night in college basketball Twitter, and here we are on this podcast 17 minutes in, and it is the only thing we've talked about. But I actually don't think he should have run the quote. And here's why. Not because it was too harsh, but because it's not indicative of reality. Like you said, there's probably 600 people who could be called NBA front office personnel, right? And they're not all good at their jobs. Like, there was one Jeff Goodman quoted a few years ago around the same time of the year. You know what he said? There is, quote, no chance. No chance. That was a quote. No chance. Andrew Wiggins goes number one in the draft. No chance. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, obviously, Wiggs did go number one in the draft, and he was then the rookie of the year, and now he's a star, right? I mean, I think people now project him as a star. So, like, not all scouts are good at their jobs. And whoever it was in November, December, who said there's, quote, no chance Andrew Wiggins is going number one in the draft, that guy's not good at his job. Whoever said Scal's not the 51st pick in the draft, that guy's not good at his job. And I mentioned Seth Davis earlier. One of the things he does heading into the draft or at some point is he will talk to 5, 10, 15, however many NBA scouts. Mm-hmm. And then he'll get a – like, here's basically what they say. He doesn't take any one – opinion and
molds it like Plato. He gets like 20 opinions, right, and says, okay, right, it's not just one guy. Yeah, absolutely. It's actually one of the better, not like he, Seth does good work, but that's one of the things every year that I make sure he reads, because I know that he's diligently spoken to a lot of scouts from across the league at varying levels.
Right. So like, you can get anybody, any one person to say any dumb thing, and to then make it, to then present it in a way that suggests it's indicative of what NBA people actually think. I actually don't think that's a good thing. Like, I could probably find some NBA scout somewhere to tell me off the record, as a source, that Steph Curry's overrated. Like, but like, what would be like, that would be stupid, right? Why would that, you know, like, I don't know. I guess.
I'm largely with you on this.
If what the scout said was harsh, but also an accurate reflection of what the NBA in general thinks of scout right now, I'd say, okay, whatever. But this was not, it was harsh, but more so than harsh, it's wrong. It's a wrong, the idea, to quote somebody saying Scal Labissiere, it wouldn't even be the 51st pick in the draft, is just wrong and it's dumb. And that's why I would not have run that quote. I'll run the harshest quote in the world, but I won't run something that dumb from a single source.
No, yeah. Okay. I mean, I talk to scouts pretty regularly, and I don't really report what they say to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not something I do. And like you said, it's basically just based on a single source kind of thing. I don't really think that it's useful in a lot of ways. So I don't do that. I understand why you would, though. Like, I'm actually not going to kill Adam for running it. Like, I think it's...
Oh, I'm not going to kill him, but, like, fine, I wouldn't have run it.
But it's just not what I do. I'll right. say that.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I put it this way. I would say this. My big board that I release is more a reflection of my opinions and a reflection of people that I talk to around the game than, you know, quoting a single scat source and writing an article on it.
So did Rick Pitino flip the bird or what, Norlander? Let's switch gears.
Okay, so yeah, that's the other big element from the game. By the way, it was a fun game, not the most well played game, but I was burning up my Vine account because every other play there was a fantastic highlight from either team. So the game itself was fun. Kentucky gets a close win. I did say I thought Kentucky would win by 9. Louisville kept it really close, and good on them. And Damian Lee looked really good, really stepped up for that team. And Kentucky was kind of down the stretch. They were oddly out of sorts, but they were just able to hang on. So, and then Pitino walks off the floor. And listen, if he had not addressed, it is not definitive. It to me, he flipped the bird, and it's pretty close that he flipped the bird, but when we saw the video, we said, no, we're not posting this unless someone asks him about it and he responds to the allegation. Well, Dana O'Neill got a hold of Pitino. And listen, I was dying laughing when I saw the quote, because Pitino's explanation was that he was saying that we are number one. Like, what are
well, that's
you even...
the thing, right? Like,
oh, my
like,
God. That's you... basically admitting that it happened.
Well, okay. You have to say, like, I was sort of on the fence. Like, I don't know. It's blurry. Like, maybe he did. The two things that made me think he probably did would be, like, A, it looked like he might have. But B, people in the crowd, like, whoever was shooting that, they don't have a blurry view. You know, they have a clear view. They're, like, looking at a real human right in front of them. And they seem to think that he flipped the bird, which suggests to me he probably did. But if he wanted to just come out and say, no, I didn't do it, people are crazy, like, I would have said, okay, he didn't do it. But, like, when you say, no, I was just telling him we're number one, well, that's admitting you flipped the bird, right?
Absolutely. And there are a few things. One, I can't even believe if you're Pitino that you do this, because you know, like, in this age when everyone's holding out a phone that has a video camera on it, and you do that in public, especially Kentucky Louisville, as smooth as you might think you might be able to be just to get it. Like, I understand it's got to really suck to be Rick Pitino to go back into Rupp. He hates going back into that game. He can't win. Kentucky's won 8 of the past 9 meetings. He's won an 8 against Kentucky as Louisville's coach. Like, without a doubt, I'm sure it eats him alive. He can't stand it. And he's a really, really true competitor. Pat Forty, credit to him, killed Pitino for no showing at the press conference. We can get to that as well. But I don't even get how you think that you can try this move and it's not going to blow up in your face. It's become the Zapruder film. It's actually added another interesting facet to the rivalry between Kentucky and Louisville, because now this game will kind of go down in lore as the game that where Pitino flipped off the fans. And by the way, a second video, you can see the story on CBSSports.com. Chip Patterson posted it over the weekend, and I updated a link on Monday morning to a Facebook video from a secondary angle. We're going all JFK, Grassy Knoll with this, but the secondary angle, you can see as soon as he does it, like, a ton of fans start pointing at him. It's very reactionary. Like, they know what just happened. And Pitino's arm goes up with such quick vigor that I'm sorry. There's little doubt. There's little doubt that he did it. And I mean, it's funny. It's kind of crazy. Now the move, if you guys want to move on to the press conference, that to me, that's just bogus, because he says, he released a statement. He said, I told our SID 24 hours before the Kentucky game that win or lose, I was not going to show up to the postgame presser. I am obligated to give to do that in conference play, but in non-conference play, and for this game, I was just going to go on the local radio show. To me, Pitino deserves to get killed for that, because you know what? You're the head coach. You should go to every press conference unless legitimately there is a health issue or some aberrational circumstance that prevents you from doing it. No ifs, ands, or buts, especially with the money that you make. You go and you show up at every damn press conference. If you lose by 90 or you win in triple overtime, it doesn't matter. So he deserves to get killed for that. And so what happened was it was a compound thing. Is he flipped the bird. We're waiting on the video, and while all that's happening, we see that he's not showing up to the press conference, which obviously everyone then rightfully piles on him for.
first off, you mentioning the grassy knoll reminded me of the time you stood on a homeless man on the grassy knoll.
That happened at the final. I stepped on a homeless man.
You were standing on a homeless man middle of the night behind.
All right,
the
let's not. Hold on. This is why Paris is a good storyteller, but also he can really. I was not standing on a homeless man like a child standing at the Grand Canyon trying to get a better view. I accidentally bumped into and stepped on a poor man without a home in the dead of night and heard a grunt, and I said, God, I think.
Middle of the night, Final Four, we decide to go. I think it was after the championship game.
It was after the title. And you know who was with us? Zagoria.
Oh.
It all comes back.
So Norlander wants to get behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll to get a view of what it might have been like if there were a second gunman. And there was a homeless man like sleeping right next to the fence, and Norlander stood on him.
Okay.
I will never forget watching you flip out. You had no idea.
Oh my God!
Next thing you know, you're stepping on a homeless guy.
That was a classic, without a doubt. But anyway, let's get back to Patino.
Okay, here's what I would say. One, what are you doing? Right, like first off, I think coaches and athletes, for the most part, you just if you react negatively to fans, it's never going to be good for you. Like never under any circumstances. You can react playfully with fans. But negatively with fans, it's just a bad look. And this is especially a bad look because it's after a loss. You're the former coach at Kentucky. You're coaching at the rival. Like, it's just dumb. You know, it's just dumb. And Rick's smart, so I don't know why he did that other than he just could not restrain himself. Secondly, the press conference is just, like, you got to be there. You know, even if you're not obligated to be there, you got to be there. Even if you sometimes aren't going to do press conferences, which, I think you should be there, but like, whatever. You want to skip the press conference after you beat IUPUI by 22? Fuck, whatever. Nobody's going to make a big deal out of that. But you got to be smart enough to know if you skip the Kentucky press conference after a loss, especially after a loss, like, it's going to be a story. So, like, you take the 8 minutes, and this is where, like, you know, Rick's got one of the best SIDs in the country, and Kenny Klein. If I were Kenny, and perhaps, like, once Rick makes his mind up on something, there's just no talking to him anyway. So, like, whatever. But if I were Kenny or somebody, I would have just said, hey, Rick, I know you don't want to do this. But even if Rick tells you 24 hours before the game, I'd say, listen, I hear you. And it is obviously your decision. But understand that we're an underdog tomorrow inside Rupp Arena. That means we're supposed to lose. If we lose and you skip the press conference, it is going to be a story. Like, are you comfortable with that? Rick, because if you're not comfortable with that, you just got to go do it. 5 minutes, 8 minutes, however long it takes, just do the, we make it short, we make it 4 minutes, but you've got to do it or else you will spend more time explaining why you skipped the press conference than you'll actually spend doing the press conference. So like, let's just, this ain't the one to skip. And and again, perhaps Kenny's been with Rick so long, he knows that once Rick decides something, there's just no talking to him. But I would imagine that Rick took more time sitting down at a computer, assuming he sat down at a computer, and typing into his blog an explanation for why he skipped the press conference than it would have actually taken to do the press conference. You know, it's 8 minutes of your life at most, and instead of spending it talking into a microphone, it's something people are talking about, you know, 48 hours later. It's just like, too, frankly, like from a smart man, too. Nonsensical decisions. Like, you don't react that way to Kentucky fans if you're a Louisville coach, period, end of story. And you show up for the press conference, right? I mean, you just got to be there. There's no getting around. There's no other way to explain it. You got to be there.
Got to be there. And, like, Louisville made it a really good game. It's not like he got run out of the building. Louisville's had many worse losses under Patino playing Kentucky than what this was. They played well. It was a fantastic, fantastic game. And as I said, it's just, you know, he's just he's a crazy competitor. I get that. I just don't get the
and his explanation
mindset behind not going. How do you not?
Well, that's the thing.
Like, I don't get how you don't how you know when you flip the bird, and maybe he immediately regretted it and he was so hot in the moment and someone said something that like really disgusted him and he just couldn't control it. I totally get that, whatever. So maybe that's what happens. But but you know that's going to be something. Like, no matter what, you know someone's going to get that. And then you still say, you know what? I'm not going to go to the press conference.
No. I mean, that's the, like, you just have to sit down and go, if I don't go to this press conference, what's going to happen? What are people going to say? What are people going to think about me? And you just avoid that. You know, in life, all the time, we do things we don't want to do to avoid the alternative. You know, like, you do things you don't, you might not want to do, because not doing it will create a scenario that you don't want any part of. That's the way Rick should have approached this. I don't want to do this press conference, but if I don't do this press conference, it's going to be a thing, not only in the state, but nationally. So I'm going to do the press conference. If you wanted to skip it after a win, at least people wouldn't paint you as a sore loser. But skipping it after a loss comes off the wrong way. And the fact that he's only skipped two press conferences this year, and they've come after the two losses, like, it's just not a good look. Sam, let me ask you this. So Kentucky wins, and I don't even know what, you know, they won a game at Rupp over a team against a team that was unranked in the preseason and still has no quality wins. So, like, I'm not sure what it means. I think Louisville's better than any of us thought they were going to be, but, like, getting a 2-point win over a team that was unranked in the preseason and still has no quality wins, like, if you wanted to be skeptical of that being a positive thing, you can be. What does it say? Is it a good thing or a bad thing for Kentucky this? They won. They beat it. Regardless of where Louisville should be ranked, they are ranked in the top 20, and Kentucky beat a top 20 team. They got two wins now over top 20 teams. They did it. Scals, like, a lot of Kentucky's preseason expectations, like number two ranking in the country, some people had them number one. It was based on this, at least three freshmen being good or being really good or great. Jamal Murray's all over the place. He has moments, but he is all over the place. Isaiah Briscoe didn't even play, and Scal was non-existent. Is that a good thing that Kentucky can still beat a presumed quality opponent while getting basically nothing from their three freshmen, you know, most heralded recruits? Or is it a bad thing? Because if you don't start getting something consistently from those guys, and I recognize Briscoe didn't play. It's not that he didn't play well. He just didn't play at all. He got hurt in pregame warmups. Unless you get those guys going, you're just not, there's a ceiling on what you can do. Like, you're not going to be, you know, a top five team in the country unless you get those freshmen going, right?
Yeah. Here's what I'll say to that. I think it's definitely much more of a good thing because you're giving these freshmen more time to just kind of mature and get better at what you need them to get better at. If you can have these guys like Derek Willis and Dominique Hawkins step up and really legitimately play minutes and meaningful minutes, and in Hawkins' case, make huge shots, in Willis's case, kind of get burnt by Damian Lee on the other end, you know, that gives these freshmen more time to actually get to where they need to be. Briscoe, for instance, is a guy that has been really, really good defensively this year. And my guess is that this game isn't real close if he plays, because he would have gone on Damian Lee at some point and Lee wouldn't have gotten loose in the second half. I think he had like 14 points in the second half. My guess is that Lee has a harder time with Briscoe than he did with Jamal Murray and with Derek Willis. Jamal Murray, like you said, I think Murray's been fine. I get the concerns. He's turned the ball over a lot. The shooting, it hasn't been as disastrous as I think a lot of people think it is. I mean, he's still shooting like 39% from three whenever the rest of the Kentucky team is shooting like 26% from three. So he's been fine to me. I get that there was a lot of hype about him. I still think that by the end of the year, he's probably an All-American. Scal is the one that, you know, we've talked enough about Scal on this podcast. It's a significant problem that they need to address. Without Scal, the ceiling is certainly limited on this team. But having said that, if you can have a guy like Alex Poitras really play that aggressively all the time, I wrote about it in my preview for the Louisville Kentucky game. Like, if he is playing aggressively and attacking constantly, he's such a good athlete and so strong for his body that he's going to be able to score 15 a night if he wants to. It's just a matter of him deciding to do it. And that's like kind of a ridiculous statement. I hate when people say that a lot of the time, but I really feel true in Poitras' case. Like, whenever he has confidence and whenever he's just attacking off the dribble and getting these bigger 4 and 5 men into space, he's really a matchup nightmare for them and really a problem that very few teams are equipped to handle. So he kind of remakes them and makes them a totally different team when he's playing aggressively. And if he's going to do that, I think that they can be at least replace some of what they were thinking they would get from Scal in the assumption that it might not happen this year. It's going to be interesting to watch them throughout the rest of the year. I think that they're ultimately fine. They're probably a top 10 team in the country. If you don't have them in the top 20, I understand right now because I don't think they've played, you know, great basketball. I know they've beaten Duke. I know they've beaten Arizona State, Louisville now. Those are good, solid wins, but all three of those teams still have a lot of question marks. So if you have Kentucky kind of in that group of question marks, I get it. Yep. But I do think that ultimately this is a top 10 team talent wise and is a top 10 team, you know, based on what we've seen from them offensively and defensively this year.
Norlander, before we get out of here, let's look forward a little bit. Tomorrow night, top ranked Michigan State, Big Ten opener at Iowa. They take their first loss there.
Ah, man, that's, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. I think that'll be a really good, really close game. Obviously, they don't have Valentine, so that's what makes it even tougher to say. Michigan State was pushed on a neutral against Oakland, and Iowa, you would think, is a better team than Oakland. I think that when we talk again on Wednesday, because that game is on Tuesday night, I think when we talk again on Wednesday, you'll still have Michigan State. Actually, that's my question. Will you keep them number one if they lose in conference at a top 20 ranked Iowa team in KenPom without Michigan State's best player?
No, because I don't know that they're really the best team in the country. They've just got the best resume in the country. And I mean, listen, you could reasonably, like I'll do the poll attacks later on this Monday. You could reasonably not have Michigan State number one right now if your explanation was simply this: their best player is no longer on that roster. They're not the best team in the country. It's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep them there till they lose. But when they lose, I you know, particularly to an Iowa team that's good but not great, I think then it frees you up to get them out of that number one spot. I don't believe they're the best team in the country. I know that, I don't even know if they're a top 15 team without Denzel Valentine. But you know, the resume is the resume, and I respect the resume for now. But if they take a loss at Iowa, I'll have a new number one, I believe.
All right, well, we'll see.
I mean, I think they probably lose at Iowa.
You think they lose? I'll say no, but I think it will be close. I'm going to say no, but barely. But, you know, we'll chat on Wednesday before the New Year's rush comes, and then we can get into stuff like, you know, Big East has a nice opener on New Year's Eve with a couple of really good teams, and we get into that.
We will talk again on Wednesday then. That'll be the plan. And Norlander, between now and then, try not to step on any homeless people. Can you promise me
I'll try now. Are you going to have another? Hey, listen, you try not to have an 18th birthday party for your son.
Okay? Holy crap. I'm glad his birthday finally happened. He has been celebrating his birthday the entire month, the two-year-old. It was finally, his birthday was finally yesterday, so we're over it. But, like, he just
ran. What are you doing? I'm Facebook friends with your wife, so I see, like, you know, she's either tagged in a photo or she posts videos, and every other day he's blowing out candles in another cake.
No, it's insane, right? I think she just gets bored and throws birthday parties every day. She, so, like, he really, like, walks around. You know how sometimes people will walk around and, like, randomly hum, like, a song or, like, a rap lyric or whatever?
Like
Peyton Manning and the Nationwide is on your side. You know, like that?
Yes.
Oliver walks around at the age of two and just randomly starts singing happy birthday to himself. Happy birthday to Oliver. Like, he just says it over and finally had to sit him down this morning and have a talk with him. I'm like, dude, it is no longer your birthday. Your birthday is over. We got to come up with something else to do. And he started crying and asked for a binky.
You ruined your son's day, GP.
I know, right? I know. But hey, I've ruined bigger days than that for bigger people.
No doubt, man.
So it'll be fine. All right, I'll talk to you guys Wednesday. I got to go. Bye.
All right, bye.